and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002 and goes out every Monday morning at 11 a.m. here on BCFM 93.2. This week, Bristolian Paul Saville, also the Bristol Underground Church. Dialect's produced by volunteers. If you want to join in, contact Volunteering Bristol, who are just off Queen's Square. You can call them on 0117 989 7733 or visit them on the web at bristolvolunteers.org.uk, and I'll repeat those contact details at the end of the show. And we start this week with Bristolian Paul Saville. Hi, Paul. Welcome to Dialect.
Hello, Tony.
Now, you've been on before, Paul, haven't you? You seem to be a sort of the bane of George Ferguson at the time, and you were sort of having a bit of a tussle with him, the mayor. What's your impression of how it's gone, having a mayor in the city?
Well, it's been an interesting few years, really, and there seems to be a catalogue of incidents and happenings in Bristol.
Well, didn't he actually say he wanted to sort of ban you from going near him or talking to him? Or what exactly was it?
No. I mean, I mean, a couple of years ago, I asked him a few questions about residents' parking zones and about democracy in Bristol. And, you know, there was a few accusations flown around sort of thing, and told me to, well, I can't say it on the radio, but, you know, go away. A couple of years have gone on, and interestingly, you know, maybe the tide's turning a little bit in Bristol, but underneath, away from George Ferguson, the person, the mayor or whoever, we have a system of problems at the moment, I think.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, for some people there are problems. Certainly for the super rich, there don't seem to be too many problems because they're getting tax breaks, all sorts of things. Mm. How do you see that manifesting it? Because you're out and about around Stokes Croft, all around the city, really, city centre. Mm. How do you see it manifesting itself?
Well, I was chatting to someone the other day, actually, out on the street, and he's saying to me, okay, there's all this investment happening in Bristol. It's, you know, there's lots of chances and money to be had and grants, etc. But how about the places like Knowle West, like Hartcliffe, etc., like Lawrence Hill? You know, will the investment reach those people? And I think, you know, it's really lots of strange happenings in Bristol at the moment.
What do you mean? Come on, what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I do know, I think, getting closer to it. But yeah, the more I seem to poke my head above the parapet, the more it seems like there is stuff that's going on that's not of common knowledge.
Well, it's interesting the way that, I mean, you
the library sell off, for example.
Well, you pricked a nerve, I think, with the mayor, because any sort of professional politician certainly shouldn't kick off the way he did against you. And my own little theory is that he thought, well, this is just a nobody, and I can say what I want to them, and he'll go away. But you know, that's the way that people react when they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing.
Sure.
So anyway, the library is one example. What's behind this?
Well, this is what I'm saying. Really, it might sound strange to your listeners, but the other night in the council house, I did actually feel sorry for George.
So you go along to full council meetings, just witness.
Yeah, and I went there, and I started to feel a bit sorry for him. I looked at him, and it was like he was reading a script that someone had written, and it was really bad, and it wasn't flowing. There was no flow to it.
Well, one thing I've noticed about George over the last couple of years is he seems to have aged at least 10 years.
Bless him. But, you know, behind, this is what I've started to discover, is behind the George Fergusons, behind the mayor, is unelected service directors who are earning big, big cash wages, salaries every year, and making really big decisions for all of us Bristolians, and unelected and pretty much unaccountable, and don't really take the stick that George has taken all it for, you know.
So that's just right. He's almost like a sort of a middleman between the rest of us and this little outfit. I mean, the other thing is, I mean, he's brought in some of these big organisations who are supposedly working for free for us, you know, for our good, like KPMG, the crooked financial services firm, who've been found many times to, I mean, one of them I seem to remember one of their partners in the US, for example, was handing out handing out bags of cash or taking bags of cash in exchange for confidential client information, this sort of thing, from these big financial services firms. I think they're called the Big Four. There was a Monopolies and Mergers Commission investigation into them. These are the companies that signed off the banks in the run-up to the 2008 crisis bailout as 100% financially sound. And yet suddenly we found, what a load of nonsense. So these are the sort of people George trusts. The other thing is, he's also changed a lot of these service directors you were talking about there, who've been there for many years. His idea was, we're going to bring a new broom in, we're getting rid of a lot of the people that have run the council at the top level for many years and bringing my new people in.
And this seems to be a recurring theme in Bristol City Council, is, you know, there's a new leadership or whatever, and then it brings a whole new people, then it's a whole new redundancy package that needs to be paid out, you know, and this is continuing pattern in Bristol. And if George and his administration have succeeded in one thing, it's really that it's empowered a lot of people to take note of what's going on in Bristol and really stand up for what they care about. So indirectly, perhaps, he has actually empowered Bristol communities, which is actually brilliant, I think.
So what did you study?
Inadvertently. Sociology and criminology.
Ah, right. Oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah. Sociology and criminology. Tell us a bit about those two subjects.
Very broad subjects. That didn't get the job in the banking sector that lots of people do go for. The thing about sociology, I learned a lot from it and I really enjoyed it. It's very broad. It's not specialised like
what
nursing
is it?
Or
what
accounting.
Is it, though?
So, ology, the study of society, society. So, the study of society, and in criminology, the same, study of crime.
And prison reform in sociology? Because I can remember there's doing a little thing of reading something about sociology to do with deviance, the idea that somebody might deviate from the pack. It's almost like, you know, society is a load of sheep, and then when one of those sheep decides it wants to go off in a different direction, all of a sudden society kicks in to say no, even if that way is in the opposite direction to the cliff.
Remember Jeremy Bentham's Panopticon? Remember that idea of this semicircular prison? Like, the idea of CCTV works on that premise of that the prisoners never know whether they're being watched or not, but they just kind of self-regulate their behaviour because of fear of being seen by this guard who may or may not be there. And that's how CCTV operates, you know, and that.
And it's
level.
A bit of the way that GCHQ and the NSA operate as well, isn't it?
Through
our phone.
Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it? Or phones and, you know, there's all sorts of ways of keeping an eye on you, particularly the mobile phone is amazing, isn't it? Because it's almost like a sort of little tracking device you're taking around with you everywhere you go.
Well, I just find it funny that we call them tablets. You know, it's, you know, something you swallow, perhaps. You know, Do you swallow this? Yeah.
And smartphone. Hey, I'm really smart. Yeah. I have a smartphone.
Well, I did a bit of art a couple of years ago, smarter phones, dumber society. You know, we're all plugged in, we can have this access to so much information, but do we lack knowledge? You know, it's we're flooded with so much stuff these days, and in through the media, the mainstream media, but also through, like you're saying, like Facebook and stuff like that.
I mean, you mentioned GCHQ. Criminology too. I mean, we've got criminology. You mentioned GCHQ. I mean, surely this whole idea of people spying on us without going to a court and getting a warrant, taking our information without bothering to go before a judge, is actually criminal in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think these days, I was going to say to you earlier, lots of the things I'm doing at the moment, I've done it for a long time. We're really trying to test the boundaries of what our society allows and doesn't allow. And I think, like, once we start to try and get away from the fear of doing things that, you know, perhaps we thought we shouldn't, but then we start to think, actually, no, it's cool, we can do this, then we perhaps have a better society.
Well, give us an example of something that society says no, but Paul Saville says, maybe this is actually fine, maybe we should try this out, maybe we should do it.
So, I started my little business, which I sell tea on the street, for example, and when I first started it, you know, I was like, well, I don't know. Am I allowed to do this? Am I allowed to sell tea? Am I allowed to just stand on a street corner? And I suppose, do it in India, perhaps, maybe in Bristol, it's not the same. But I just went along and I did it.
I suppose a lot of that is where to do it. Can I do it here? Can I do it there?
I think in Cabot Circus it would be very, very different. But
how long would you last in Cabot Circus, do you think? 5 minutes? Maybe not
3 minutes.
That.
I mean, I remember taking a megaphone in there once and it got smashed in a matter of minutes. Literally, I mean, you know. No, you're not allowed. No dogs, no skateboarding, no megaphones.
Yeah, so it's not really a public place. It's a private space.
I think we talked about this before, but yeah. this idea of it's kind of a private sphere made to look like a public place.
Ah, in the guise of a public place.
Ah, yeah, so, yeah.
And what about the, I mean, because we've got the criminality of the banks, haven't we? I mean, you know, amazing. And let it be also said, people like the royal family and the real senior people in the society. Mm. Well, with the death of Diana, well, I don't know what you think about that, but there's certainly questions there. And, you know, and the royals failing to intervene in places like the Channel Islands where there was all this abuse going on, just simply turning the other cheek or a blind eye to it. I mean, we seem to be living in a society with a lot of criminality in some of the most trusted positions at the top, Paul. Mm. I just wonder what you think, if anything, can be done about it.
I think it's happening. It's the tide's turning, isn't it? You know, people are starting to really question how this whole thing's structured and why. I mean, most prominent, the child abuse and stuff like that has been disregarded for years. You know, there's no way, there's no possibility that Rolf Harris could have ever, you know, trusted Rolf, could ever have committed such things. But I mean, you know, I'm interested to know how this is, you know, how this is all progressing, because we're starting, I mean, it's about truth essentially, isn't it? You know, common truth. You know, there is something out there that is truth.
Well, and also justice, isn't it? Because justice doesn't mean anything unless it's actually justice for all. Anyway,
yeah, sure.
Getting back to more the local politics, because I love the way, I mean, you know, going along to a council meeting is not the sort of people most people would just think, oh, that's the most boring thing in the world. Yeah. I would never do that. But, you know, fair play to you for doing it. There's all sorts of stuff going on at the moment, isn't there? There's the residence parking, the Stapleton allotments. How do you think that's played out in the city council, in the, you know, full council meetings?
So, like I say, I mean, you know, in more recent times, it's become much. I mean, I used to go to council meetings, sad as I am, 4 or 5 years ago before Ferguson was elected and stuff like that. And it was very boring. It was very boring. These days, it's literally like a pantomime or you know, the King's Court sort of thing, and you know, the throne up the top end.
Really, that feudal?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have nothing to compare it to, but it's an interesting one. And like I say, it's interesting that
Henry VIII or something.
More and more people are looking at what's going on in Bristol. And I mean, I was there the other night, and lots of noise. There's three different protests going on at the same time.
Which were they then?
So yeah, there was Acorn, which is a housing movement. I think they're operating outside of Easton, but for the whole of Bristol. Looking at like tenants' rights and, you know, the dark, dingy, mouldy flats that landlords seem to be able to get away with.
Well,
these
they can.
Days.
This is it, because people are so desperate. Well, they charge what they want.
Well,
they?
Hopefully not anymore. And they've basically, what's it called? They've written something up which they asked the councillors to sign, like an agreement. I've forgotten the word, but there was that. There was the residence parking zone lot, which seems to be an ongoing campaign. Which is, I don't know if it's getting anywhere or. Doesn't seem like George will be listening anytime soon, as they keep introducing more and more zones. And then there was a few Stapleton allotment protesters who kind of taken. Well, they were taken out of the trees by the administration, the metro bus.
Okay, there's the metro bus, which is the misguided rail, I think they call it.
Bullet bus, you know, it's just straight.
Or the fantasy tram.
Yeah.
Because everyone likes to think it's a tram, but it isn't. And I was just hearing the other day from Bruce, Steve Satan, that does he does his show on a Monday, actually, just after this show. Mm. And he was, because he's a spokesperson for Rail Future, and he was saying how in Nancy in France, they've just scrapped their guided bus because it didn't work. And the same in Cambridge, they're looking at scrapping theirs. It was a disaster when they tried it in Cambridge. Mm. It seems like we've got a sort of gullible bunch of fools at the city council that will take on projects which, if anyone was to bother to scratch the surface, they will say this isn't going to work.
Well, it's interesting because I looked into the BRT. Well, it was actually called the BRT.
That's right. They've changed the name, haven't they? Yeah.
Absolutely. And it became a very poisonous...
bus rapid transit. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds very boring as well. Metrobus sounds a bit sexy, doesn't it? But, yeah, Metrobus.
I know.
Yeah.
Let's relaunch it. Yeah. Nobody likes it. We need to relaunch this.
But this is an old deal. This was done in 2005. It was all signed off by Bristol City Council and... I read something online that was saying that South Gloucestershire had said if it didn't continue the Metrobus, then it would be the Bristol City Council would face legal action. So there's a whole, and this is how I think this whole, not just in Bristol, not just in the UK, but the whole world in fact is operating on fear. And I think paraphrasing Russell Brand a little bit, I do have a soft spot for Russell, and you know, it's like. If we can try and like work on love, if you like, or rather than fear, and we get away from that paradigm, then maybe we'll start seeing a different world.
That's a bit of Bill Hicks there as well.
Bill Hicks, man. Yeah, I think Russell likes him as well.
But will you be voting in the general election or the local elections? I mean, if you're going along to the city council, watching the full council, I would like to think that at least you would like to have some kind of involvement in. I don't think Russell would, but yeah. What do you make of that? Is there really any point in voting?
Do you know what? And it's funny because I've never ever voted, and in local elections or in national elections. And this morning I was thinking about it and I was like, oh well, I want to try everything at least once in my life, you know. And so maybe it would be a good opportunity to do it now, get rid of the Tories now. And then there's a part of me that thinks, well, is it really going to change anything? I'm a little bit, I'm a little bit unsure about whether. But then for me, it's not about having one way of doing things. It's not just about voting. It's about direct action. It's about petitions. It's about speaking to your community. I think a lot of people think that if you just turn up every 4 years, four or five years, then that's enough. And then you allow someone else to make the decisions for you. For me, that's not enough. You've got to be doing the things now. And that, for me, is my new philosophy. These days, I like to think of it like, if I want to do something, then I'll do it. I don't want to harm others, but I just want to get out there and live my life and experience it. And, on the George Ferguson stuff, go to the council house and, you know, heckle. Bring back heckling. And he did get a bit, I mean, not just from me, but from a lot of people.
If George is a front man, as you were implying earlier on, and I mean, I think, you know, it's certainly possible, being a former merchant venturer, that there's quite a lot of big business interests in the city, including things like the Bristol Post, you know, powerful institutions in the city that see George as their pal, you know, certainly from lots of nice merchant venturer dinners gone by. And even though he's said, of course, that he's left the merchant venturers, he still has a lot to do with them as mayor. And, of course, they will be inviting him along as mayor. Mm. So, in a way, him saying, I'm not a merchant venturer anymore. Mm. I mean, and also going back to the Bristol merchants, I mean, you go back to the time of John Cabot and him looking at, you know, mapping the coast of Newfoundland and beginning the colonisation and genocide in America. I mean, I was looking at it the other day, 75 million Native Americans at least perished in the genocide in America. You know, the country has been born on this, and Bristol played quite a big important part in kicking all that off. Yeah. Of course, far from the eyes of Bristolians at the time. Yeah. They didn't know this was going on. Yeah. They just saw there were certain people who were walking around the city with rather more money than they had before.
And that things changed?
The merchant venture as well. Good question. And then, of course, then there was the slave trade. Yeah. About 7 million perished black African slaves on the Middle Passage. So they've got blood on their hands, these guys. Mm. And they do seem to try and sidestep that still, which is, it doesn't say a lot for their character, really. Is it as simple as that? Is George just a front man for the business people?
I think, like, we all have choices in life, don't we? We can either say, yes, I want to do it, or no, I want to do that. And I kind of sometimes think, like, well, he is just a human being, and he does, you know, he probably gets home in the evenings and thinks, oh, you know, that was really awful, and blah, blah, blah. But then he does have choices, like I do. You know, I don't want to work for a bank, because I don't really agree with their perspective on the world. So I don't, and that's my choice.
What about an ethical bank? if there's
does
such
it
a
exist?
Thing.
I mean, I guess that's a big topic. You know, does it even exist? I mean,
well, Triodos and the co-op would argue that they've got very strict ethical policies about where your money cannot be invested in certain
co-op
things.
The co-op collapsed, didn't it? I mean, they stole all the money. You know,
well, it's been taken over by a hedge fund, but they still have an ethical investment policy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the money topic's really interesting. It's big,
well, the Romans started it all off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whatever it is, nearly 2,000 years ago now.
We've still got an emperor in Bristol, you know.
Well, I suppose you're right. Yeah. But with your tricycle, you're spending quite a lot of time Stokes Croft around that area.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about all the issues down there? That is to say, things like the transformation of the bear pit and the planning permission that's been consent which has been granted for these luxury flats up at the carriage works. What's the word on the street and what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in an interesting position there. I meet all sorts of people. I've met I can't mention names obviously, but you know, magistrates, students, Broadmead shoppers, Stokes Croft cafe people, I don't know what you call them, cafe diners, high class prostitutes, Holiday Inn residents, I got a real mix of people there, the BRI as well. There's lots of people coming down from there and the offices and stuff
these
like
that. These are your clients.
Absolutely.
They're drinking your tea.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. And I've really enjoyed the last 4 or 5 months being in and around Stokes Croft in the centre of town. I move around a little bit, but, you know, it's interesting. And I've seen, actually, I mean, on a sad note, I mean, I've really seen a lot of homelessness, and it is a real big problem in Bristol at the moment. And I know that there is a BAM meeting coming up, Bristol Housing Action Movement. They've got like some kind of demonstration and meeting happening in the bear pit. I forget the date. I think it might be April. But yeah, I mean, there is. I hope the tide's turning. And it's really tough out there. And I mean, I said on Facebook on the Tricycle page yesterday and today, you know, I don't turn people away for a cup of tea. If you don't have enough money, then come and have a tea. If you can pay, brilliant. But I don't, you know, it's not. It stinks of elitism in Bristol at the moment, and we need to get away from that. This is everyone's city, and it's time we started looking after each other.
Have you noticed a change over the last few years, though, in the sort of number of people homeless or around that area? Because the thing is, there's been a big transformation. The bear pit used to be quite... Someone, I think, decided to put some wild flower plants down, and things have kind of moved on from there now. It's become a sort of trading area.
Yeah, I've been told it's a designated market zone now. And as soon as you hear the designated market zone now, it means that there's something going on, I think. And, you know, I mean, I've heard horrible things like, you know, the vagrants aren't welcome, and even the Hare Krishna has been told that they can't give people free food anymore, which, as he told me the other day, he'd been doing it for 20-odd years in and around the bear pit. I've been homeless twice, and I know what it's like to be cold and not have anywhere to go at the end of the night when all your friends go home and whatever else. And, yeah, I have shoplifted, and they both said to me, oh, well, that's, you know, it's against the law and it's wrong and blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you know, you do what you have to do. You know, if you have to go and steal food from Asda or any other supermarket, not just Asda, not saying that you should definitely shoplift from Asda, any supermarket's fine. But, you know, it's like you do what you can. You feed your family. That, for me, is the moral is, you know, it's wrong to go and hurt someone.
Well, as I remember, Lord Denning actually did pass a law years ago, or a precedent in law, where saying that it's okay to shoplift if you need to feed yourself. The other thing is there was the shoplifting vicar. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A guy called John Papworth. I think it was back in the mid-1990s. But he's hilarious, and he got into the national press a couple of times.
Yeah.
He was saying, look, you know, if you're hungry, go and shoplift. It's as simple as that. This is a victimless crime. These
break bread with your enemies.
I don't know if John Papworth was... And of course, the Church of England hierarchy rather came down on him like a ton of bricks. But, you know, there is definitely that sentiment out there, I think. It's almost like hardwired into it.
Yeah. I think all of the experiences that I've had in my life have made me the person I am, and I've been sectioned once in my life. I've been in a mental hospital once. I've been an ice cream seller. I've been a chai waller. I've been homeless. I've been to university. For me, all of these experiences have enriched my my life. And for me, essentially, like, if someone wants a cup of tea, then I'll give them a cup of tea. If someone wants the roof over their head, give them a roof over their head, you know. I think, like I say, if we get away from that fear paradigm of, you know, this is mine and this is, you know, you must pay me to have this cup of tea. Honestly, I've made so many friends on the street, like I say, all sorts of people, but a lot of the homeless people, they say, oh, you keep up the good work, you know, because they don't see me as a threat. They don't see me as someone that's saying, no, this is my tea and you must pay for it. Give it to them. You know, it's just tea. It's the least I could do, you know.
Sounds to me like you've got almost like a sort of spiritual business going there. Anyway.
Chai and a spiritual samosa, £2.50. To you, Tony.
Paul Saville, if you want, people want to catch up with you, whereabouts are you, your Chai cycling?
So, yeah, I mean, we're going through transition at the moment. Obviously, it's come up to summer, so maybe I'll be back on the ice creams as well. But Chai Cycle's still going strong. You can find us down at the Bear Pit, or near the Bear Pit, on the Full Moon side. Just next to Holiday Inn, sometimes down at Temple Meads.
Until you get moved on, then you'll be somewhere else around the Bear Pit, probably.
Yeah, so I'm operating on a peddler's licence, which is really interesting, and it's an old age...
That's not the pedal for the bicycle, no.
P-E-D-L-A-R-S.
So you're pedalling something, yeah, okay.
Interesting, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, same sort of thing. So how does that work?
The peddler's licence. So, I mean, it's £14, and strangely you get it from the police. And you go down with your address and everything
so
else.
So you're not paying the police not to move you on, exactly.
No, I mean, the law states that I'm allowed to trade as long as I keep moving. So if anyone did come along and say, look, can you move along, then I'm obliged to by the...
I suppose you could have your brake just about on, so you're slowly moving across the pavement.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a mad old world and it's a difficult situation. But for me, when people have asked me, how are you allowed to do this, or how did you make this? For me, it's simple. You have an idea, a dream, and you go out there and you do it. If not that, then spend miserable hours down the job centre, you know, signing on and worrying about, you know. For me, it's now, it's like, let's do it. Let's radicalise. Let's do something about it and stop living in fear, you know.
Yeah, well, I totally agreed on that, Paul.
Yeah.
Lovely to have you on Dialect again.
Great. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk. UK.
And I'm joined now by Joanne Parkin, who's from Pusey, from Wiltshire. Hi, Jo. Welcome to Dialect.
Hi, Tony. Pleased to be here.
Now, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because even though it's a very countrified place, Pusey, in the middle of Wiltshire, it's actually, there's not a lot of... I mean, I drive through or go on the train through Wiltshire, and I often think there's hardly anyone seems to live in this county. It mostly seems to be fields and sheep, but there's obviously stuff going on in Pusey, etc. So what's it like living there?
Well, it is idyllic, and it is a village area, but it has a very lively undercurrent, comes alive on the night time.
Now, you've come here to talk about some pretty serious stuff, so let's get into that first of all. You were in the St John's Ambulance and you came across what is pretty serious child abuse, didn't you?
I certainly did.
So how first did you encounter it then?
I first encountered it on a duty with a child who I'd never met before from another division.
Okay, so just tell us what you were doing for St John's Ambulance.
I was on duty with Pusey cadets. I was duty officer. So I looked after the cadets whilst we were on duty.
Okay, so this is a kind of a bit like the Cubs or something, whereas you're an adult or a young person, but an adult in charge of these kids. Is it the Badgers they call them?
The Badgers is, I was youth leader for the Badgers, but they can't do public duty. They're 5 to 11-year-olds.
Okay.
So I was the youth leader for Pusey Badgers, but I also used to do active first aid duties and help train the cadets.
And how did you get into doing the St John's Ambulance?
I was a cadet myself in the 80s, and I had a very positive experience. And I've saved quite a few lives through knowing first aid.
Well, how?
First one, I didn't have any training. I saved someone from drowning in Germany. And I suppose it was natural because my parents were in the medical profession.
Oh, okay. All right, but getting back to the abuse, I mean, this is in the news since Jimmy Savile, a lot more people talking about it. How did you encounter that?
I first encountered it when one of my our Pusey cadets was inappropriately touched, And I went through all the proper channels and everyone was just ignoring me, or I could see the shutters coming down in their eyes.
When you say inappropriately, how do you mean? And who was saying it was inappropriate?
The cadet was plucking up the courage to tell me something, and it went on for months, so I told her to spit it out. So she did. Rubbing up against her inappropriately.
So this was an older man, was it?
Older than me, and I'm 43, so.
Okay.
And
how old was she?
Well, this is the dilemma, you see. It was either 3 days before her 18th birthday or a few days after, but either way, she could still be considered a child up until 21.
It's not appropriate in any case, is it? You know, especially if she's being so-called supervised by somebody.
And she was a village girl as well, so she was led quite a sheltered life, and I reported it through the appropriate channels.
Within St John's Ambulance?
Within St John, through Child Protection, and hit brick walls. And then I took advice off another lady within St John whose husband used to be a copper. And she said, you know, go above their heads. So I went to the commissioner.
Well, this is a bit like the idea of the police investigating the police, isn't it? In a way, you've got to go outside the organisation if you're going to get a fair hearing.
I threatened them with the police first and foremost, and the papers, because they wanted me to get rid of this cadet, and they wanted me to shut up, and I was told to shut up.
When you say they, was it this specific person, or did they have people within St John's Ambulance who were backing them up to get rid of the cadet rather than to deal with the problem?
People were just doing as they're told. People were following orders blindly, blatantly, just doing as they were told, whether it was morally or illegally wrong.
Is it like the army almost, that people do what they're told, follow orders?
Yes. Yes, very much like the MOD.
Okay. Now, so what happened then?
Then I took the cadet, along with another appropriate person, so I wasn't on my own, to the commissioner's house on a Sunday afternoon and told her that if this wasn't dealt with...
So you said the commissioner, is that overseeing Wiltshire or something?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, she's in charge. She's still in charge. And from then on, she called me trouble because they had to do something. And people were saying it was a witch hunt, but it wasn't, because we actually caught this person doing inappropriate things before and was a danger, and we couldn't take our eyes off him.
Let's have some names of these individuals.
The individuals, right.
Well, not necessarily the girl that was inappropriately touched, but the people who were covering up within St John's Ambulance.
Child protection team was... she told the two witnesses, who one of them was the cadet that was touched up previously, to shut up and forget about it now. And she was obviously in charge of child protection, and she was very ineffective at it, because she knew about Rob Harrison 2 years before I actually went to the police about him. And you know, I told plenty of people, and the children of Wiltshire told plenty of leaders, but they sort of knew they could come and tell me and I'd act on it.
So who was Rob Harrison?
Rob Harrison was the head of youth for St John Ambulance Wiltshire. He was also an NHS nurse working for the NHS in Great Western Hospital, and he also used to own a private ambulance that used to move seriously sick patients from hospital to hospital via NHS contracts.
All right, so he was quite a favoured chap and so-called trusted with, you know, with people who are ill being moved around in the privatisation of the ambulance service. But he's still, isn't he, at the St John's Ambulance, Commissioner of Youth, and you can get him on the St John's Ambulance email address.
Well, he shouldn't be, but not according to the police in the meeting I had, although I'm still waiting for the minutes.
OK, well, let's not run too far ahead, because what happened next?
So I had several children approach me and tell me that Rob Harrison had been with children at camp. And also, on the way back from the commissioner's house with the cadet who'd been inappropriately touched, the boy, the young man who we were with, leant forward in the car and said, I could have with him at camp when I was 15. And it seems, and other people have since admitted this within St John, it seems that every single cadet in Wiltshire knew what Rob Harrison and his two little sidekicks were getting up to.
But these are children, aren't they? So difficult to take what they're saying at face value.
I go on instinct, and children don't walk up to perfect strangers and tell them things like that, you know. It's I have a gift with children and animals, and they know they're safe with me, and I sort of attract them. They tell me things, but in experience, I know they've told me for a reason, and I could also tell that this guy wasn't right because my instinct told me every time I was in the same room with him. Plus the bullying I received for getting rid of the other guy. But Robert Harrison, he's the guy who's been running the show above everybody else. Everybody else was dancing to his tune. That is his superiors at St. John. Everyone did as Rob says. I could tell he was a... He said things in my... He bullied me. He, you know, he's a very Savile-like character. In, you know, airs and graces, marching about like he owns the place.
Well, maybe he does.
Well, he doesn't. He doesn't, but, you know, there was an instant dislike for me anyway from him because I could tell what he was. And he said things like, while we were on conferences, he said, oh, yeah, yeah, about children on camp. He said, but you don't them. And he said that in front of 30 witnesses with us, and, you know. And I thought, that's a weird thing to say, and, like, looking at me... Because I was trying to catch him in the act. I was trying to raise the money for my division so I could pay for myself and someone else to go and catch him at camp. But his division the money for an ambulance for Melksham, so...
Crikey.
So we never... So someone was obviously giving him inside information. Everybody must have known because everybody within St. John knows that he was into... He was married... That was a sham. The children were telling me it was a sham, and it is right. He is, you know, he's not with his wife, obviously, now. I think that might have been the police turning up that did it for her. And him being struck off as a nurse. And he's supposed to not have anything to do with St. John Ambulance because they're being so transparent nowadays. That's why there was no press there in court and nothing was reported on.
So how do you think he managed to get away with it?
Because he's got a Savile-like character, hand on the shoulder, domineering body language, posture, arrogance. You know, I will, you know, they're very, very clever. They're very, very clever and charismatic people.
But did you feel you were doing this on your own, or were there others around you that were kind of on your side in a way? Or were you,
at the time, the only person I had on my side was my assistant and supposedly... Child protection. But she started dancing all of a sudden. She went from knowing that I was trying to catch Rob Harrison to dancing to his tune and laughing around him and turning into mush and playing up to him just like the children do when they're in the same room with him. You know, they have a lot of control over people and so, people fear them.
So what happened with her investigation then?
Nothing. She never got back to me. And she told the two other witnesses, which the police have interviewed, to shut up. Just shut up about it now. That's child protection within St. John Ambulance.
So what have the police actually done?
The police actually went on the evidence. They took my statement. Then they went to my witnesses because a lady from Devizes, she also had stuff to add about camp. And... So I only found that after he got rid of me, you know, and...
So, hang on, he got rid of you. How did he do that? Well, because surely you're making a complaint against him, not the other way around.
Yeah. What happened was, unfortunately, I'm not, you know, it's not up to me. You're not allowed to be prejudiced. So when a little girl wanted to join St. John, obviously, I welcomed her. And her mother was a bit of a nutcase and rang up, saying something, not really incriminating me, saying that I'd said something. And he took that as his perfect excuse. It wasn't anything I'd done. She's left the area now because she's basically been chased out of Pusey because of she's a bit, you know, she's a bit of a horrible woman. But she gave him the excuse by saying I had been compromised as a youth leader. And obviously... I sort of knew I'd been stitched up, so I just backed off and went to the... I had a few months sleepless nights. Then I went to the police, said, look, I can't sleep. This guy's doing this. His friends are doing this. Everybody knows about it. It's been going on for 20 years. and they've been the children of Wiltshire for 20 years, and I don't know what's been happening in the hospitals, you know. But the police were so convinced by the evidence I gave them and the other witnesses that they did their general investigation. Then they left it a while and went back and did his house, and that's how they found the pictures of, you know, children, pornographic pictures of children on his computer.
So what's happened to him now?
He was convicted, but as we only got him for 12...
So when was the actual case?
That was on the 5th of August, and I was there. That was in Swindon Magistrates Court.
So that's 2014?
Yeah.
Last year, yeah.
Yeah. It took them, like, 3 years for me first reporting it. I thought they weren't getting anywhere. £60 fine. He's got to sign the sex offenders register, and he has to attend some sex offenders counselling kind of thing for years. But what the main object was, you know, I knew he wasn't going to get jailed because our legal system doesn't favour the abused, it favours the abusers. So I knew I wasn't going to get him jailed, but I knew that the children at Great Western Hospital and the children in Wiltshire were still going to be subjected to if I didn't do something. So I just stuck with it, basically.
The other thing, of course, is just to make sure the word gets around about somebody. Did you think that had much of an effect?
No, there was no press there. There was no representative from St John Ambulance, and there was no representation from the NHS. It has been totally
hushed
up. So
who was at the court case?
Me.
Rob's court case?
Me. from 10 to 9, when I was trying to get in before the courts opened, till he'd been sentenced, and I said my piece to him outside the courtroom. That I'm waiting for his victims to come forward, and I will be there watching when they do, and I'll be there to help his victims. So I've set up a group. It's very small at the moment, the St John Ambulance Victim Support Group, because I'm sure there'll be plenty of people in the future coming forward, and I'm sure it's not just a Wiltshire-based thing.
So, I mean, must have made you pretty nervous taking this on. I mean, how did you pluck up the courage to do it?
I was petrified. I was absolutely petrified. I don't know. Something just keeps making me stand up for what's right, regardless of the consequences to myself, which have been quite harsh because I've been ostracised, I've been victimised, I've been bullied. Other people have lost their positions within St John for trying to defend me. Other good people within St John have been removed from St John in Wiltshire, and I don't know, with my last breath, I will defend children and children's rights, and I'll do as much as I can to keep them safe.
But doesn't it bother you that the ultimate effect might be that some of the best people, the most courageous people, people best prepared to look after the children in St John's Ambulance aren't there anymore?
Well, of course they're not, because it's full of middle-class do-gooders who just want the glory. Because it gives you a certain amount of kudos. Oh, yes, I'm an NHS nurse, but I'm not only an NHS nurse. I own my own private ambulance company. I am God. And I also am head of Wiltshire Youth, St John. You know, that's some credentials, isn't it? And people just seem to fold under it. And anyone who had any decency has been long removed, really, from the youth. A couple of people have left because of what happened to me. Give their excuses and remove themselves from anything to do with youth. And other people are still there for the glory, but yeah, it's a strange one because I'm the one who's been ostracised. Yeah, it was my kids who won out of the west of England for first aid, and it was my kids who come forth out the whole country in first aid. So I must have been doing something right, and I'm still in touch with the majority of my cadets and badgers now, so, and their parents and the community.
What about the police, though? How did you? I mean, 3 years is a long time to have to wait after first going to them to actually get a prosecution. Do you think the time has come where the police are more to be trusted by whistleblowers like yourself? Because this is always going to be a bit of a sticky wicket, isn't it? Because the police haven't acted in the past, and yet after the Savile case, we're told, now things have changed, go to the police and at least something will happen.
Yeah, I think because it was a specialist, it was the Safeguarding Children lady, Debbie Neal from Salisbury, Safeguarding Children from the police. It helps when you I'm, you know, I know it's a man and woman thing, but it helps when you've got a woman who's, women tend to have more compassion. In, not that I'm slating men, just women tend to have more compassion. And I think if you're telling the truth, people can always see that. They can see that you're telling the truth. And she obviously saw that I was telling the truth and that my witnesses were telling the truth. Only I did have a bit of a rant on social media saying the police are useless, blah, blah, blah. But they had to keep silent because St John Ambulance, because I put a lot of posts out public, St John Ambulance have had people watching me since I left St John. They always seem, you know, they've been watching me. So if I want to say anything to St John HQ, I just put it on Facebook or Twitter, you know.
But I suppose the big question is, are the children in Wiltshire in, or anywhere else in the country for that matter, but particularly Wiltshire, which you know about, are the children, the Badgers, the St John's Ambulance youth, safe?
No. No, they're not. Because the whole selection by middle-class people, not that I've got anything against the middle class, but they don't seem to live in the real world. And they don't seem to live in the same world as the children who were coming in from your regular Joes going out to work and the regular people's children who were going to Badgers. They don't have anything in common. They don't know that they select by... They have an interview thing now where they select by kudos, so it'll only be certain people who have a certain standing. Not doesn't matter whether you're good at what you do, whether you're, you know... But if you're going to have someone who was privately educated with a little title, or someone who was comprehensive educated, good, hard-working, decent person, the decent person is not going to get a position within St John anywhere in this country. I've been involved with St John Ambulance in one way or another since I was a child. It's all for show. The good, like I say, the good people, they're the people who may still be in the background trying to keep their heads down, trying to do some good, but a lot of the good people were gotten rid of for defending me or trying to say that I was right in what I've done.
Now, I mean, I think you're a bit of an angel, really, doing the stuff you do, and obviously got some real aptitude with children. You've got a real ability, real aptitude and knowledge around first aid. Are you able to actually sort of use that skill at the moment? Or the skills with first aid and with kids?
Yes, I'm
all?
Still, you know, everyone in the village knows if anyone's sick or injured, everyone knows to come to me, and they tend to. They tend to. I've had to deal with some. I saved a guy's life in Pusey one day. We were going to judge children's competitions at head office. He lost 3 pints of blood on me and still lived. Still kept him alive. I did, so yeah.
Well done, Joe. And also, you've met through St John's Ambulance some of the sort of posh knobs of the land, haven't you? People like Duke of Edinburgh. What about Princess Anne? She's not far from you.
No, she's not. Also, I met Princess Margaret at school. I met Rolf Harris, and I met Prince Philip, and that was when I was in St John as a cadet, actually, in Hyde Park.
Prince Philip, what did you make of him then?
Well, I was a bit shocked, because I was very camera shy. The TV cameras were there, and there was about 300 to 500 girls lined up with me, and he got off the back of his Land Rover thing, that he was stood on the back, and walked straight over to me. And obviously I had to curtsy and kiss my hand and told me I was charming. And Rolf Harris grabbed hold of me, kissed my hand and told me I was a charming young lady as well. And put me in the spotlight a bit. But yeah, it makes me wonder now what that was actually all about.
Well, you mean almost like them coming straight over to you to sort of draw attention to you for some reason?
Maybe, yeah. You're on the right road there, Tony.
Well, we'll
definitely
see. We'll
on the right
see.
Road
I mean,
there.
Certainly, you know, Duke of Edinburgh is very powerful and the Queen's very powerful. We've got a general election coming up soon and the Queen's personal private secretary has quite a lot to say about the forming of the next government. So I don't think for 1 minute that the royal family are just sort of there for show. They're not. They have actually quite a lot of political power.
Yes, they had the country fooled into thinking that they'd relinquished all power, but that was a ruse, as we found out a few years ago.
Anyway, Joanne Parkin, thanks ever so much for coming in to see us. It's been fascinating. Thanks for naming the names. Anything else you wanted to add?
Yes, I'd like to, if anyone else out there is against child abuse in any shape or form and want
and
to do
something... And if you're not,
something,
there's something wrong with you.
Yes. and in any shape or form would like to join us in Trafalgar Square, 12 noon on April the 11th, for a protest against child abuse and the 24 alleged paedophiles that are still sat in the House of Commons right now as we speak.
How many?
24 we're up to.
Oh, and that's 12 noon, Saturday the 11th of April, Trafalgar Square. How do people contact you or contact the...
Facebook.
Okay.
Joanne Victoria Park, and they can contact me on Facebook.
And any other way of contacting that march or that rally or whatever?
Yes, you can contact it through Joe Public.
J-O-E?
J-O-E Public. If they could look him up on Facebook. He started doing it all on his lonesome and ended up getting arrested because he looked at David Cameron. So we've decided that, you know, a couple of thousand people we know are definitely going, so we're going to do a silent protest with banners to try and get the message to Westminster, or Westmonster, as I like to call them.
Crikey. Okay, well, good luck with all that. Thanks, Joanne Parkin, for joining us on Dialect.
Thank you very, very much for having me.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
It's Jeff Sparks with the What's On.
Thank you, Tony. This is your What's On going from Dialect. Starting with Friday, 3rd of April, Snuff will be performing with special guests at the Fleece in St Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £12 in advance and doors open at 7pm. Also on 3rd of April, Metallica Reloaded will be performing with support from Pantera UK at the Beer Keller in All Saints Street, Bristol. Tickets are £10 in advance and doors open at 7:30pm. On to Song of the Week, and I present C6 Steve. In a career that has spanned 9 years, starting in 2006, he has released 7 studio albums, 2 compilation albums and several singles. This is from his most recent album, Sonic Soul Surfer, which was released this month, and this is the song Summertime Boy. That was C6 Steve with Summertime Boy from the album Sonic Soul Surfer. For more information, you can check out www.csicksteve.com. Also, on 26th of June, C6 Steve will be performing as part of Bristol Summer Series at the Harbourside. Into Saturday, 4th of April, the Nirvana tribute, Novana, will be performing with support from the Foo Fighters tribute, Pity the Foo, at the Fleece in St Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £10 in advance and doors open at 7 p.m. Finally, on Sunday, 5th of April, the Wurzels will be performing with support from the Skimmity Hitchers at the Fleece in St. Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £17.50 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. That's all from me. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Take care and goodbye.
That's all for this week. Dialects Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast, broadcast on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 11 a.m. every Monday morning. If you're online, you can subscribe to our emails or download the podcasts from dialectradio.co.uk. Thanks to our guests this week, Paul Saville, also from St John's Ambulance, whistleblower Joanne Parkin, and also the Underground Church will be on next week. And to studio engineer Dave Bazanko, thanks. Dialects are Bristol Broadband Co-op production and anyone can contribute. You can contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733 or at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. So, that was Dialects and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week. Goodbye for now.
To give, but lines say this love is best. Will leave us in emotional pace. Take a walk, taste a rest. No, take a rest. I seen you digging a hole in your neighborhood. You're crazy, but you're lazy. No need to live in a lean-to. Your troubles must be seen to. See through money like it's paper. With faces I remember. I drink on a daily basis. The way soda cools my temper. It never cools my temper. Walking through the suburbs, they're not exactly lovers, you're a couple, especially when your body's double duplicate, and then you wait for the next Kuwait. Karma coma, Jamaica and Roma, karma coma, Jamaica and Roma, karma coma, Jamaica and Roma, karma coma, Jamaica and Roma. Ever when there's trust to be treated, someone with funk will hear beats. Karma coma, Jamaica and Roma. 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 Jamaica and Roma.